now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's probably what Diego Simeone is doing right now. Unbelievable. Welcome everybody to our Champions League live recap Tuesday. James, Ben, Jonathan. Johnson is not here. I just say that automatically because I love you, JJ. James, Ben, Jimmy, Conrad, Heath, Pierce. It's Tuesday. Two teams are in. And guess what? Some of you might be surprised. Lucho Garcia, we tip our hats off to you, my friend. Benfica beat Ajax in Amsterdam. And most importantly, as well, if you are a Manchester United fan or Atleti, for that sake, Diego Simeone gets the job done and win 2-1 in aggregate, 1-0 on the night against Manchester United. And goodbye, Cristiano Ronaldo. No Ronaldo, no Messi in the Champions League. It really feels like the beginning of something unbelievable. Welcome to Que Golazo. By the way, we have a $100 gift card today, everybody, to say thank you for being a returning viewer, a first timer, and for helping us get to 10,000 subscribers. Jimmy Conrad, what's up, buddy?
I am just trying to absorb everything that I've just witnessed over the Champions League in the round of 16. And fun fact for everybody, I'll start here with my discourse, that Benfica have made more Champions League quarterfinals than Manchester United in the last 10 years. They've done it three times. Manchester United's only done it twice.
Interesting. Heath Pierce, how do you feel about that stat? Do you have a stat for me, Heath?
I don't. I'm being put on the spot to come up with the stat. But I'm good. I mean, another day of matches that were fantastic. And, you know, like you said, the changing of the tides. Shout out Robert Lewandowski, who is probably going to be a finalist again on the Ballon d'Or, only to fall short of somebody else.
Probably Messi another time. James Benj, what's up, buddy? How are you? How do you feel after witnessing what you just witnessed?
Well, while we're all talking stats, if I let you in on some behind the scenes action from the...
You are Benjima, so I CBS, do expect the very CBS best.
Slack room. Yes. I'm sure none of you will need telling that Cristiano Ronaldo didn't do very much this game. Actually, myself and our editor and stats guru, Mike Goodman, spotted about 65 minutes. He hadn't had a shot yet and spent about 10 minutes hurriedly trying to find when is the last time Cristiano's not had a shot in the Champions League for him to then take a shot, a really bad one. And it was the only one he had all game and totally... I'll tell you later. I'll tell you when the last time he didn't have a shot was. But ruined my day that.
Yeah, well, and also too, I remember you writing the article about, you know, that hat-trick that he scored against Tottenham as well. You know, it had been it was a long time before he had even been that productive up to that point as well. So, you know, hey, Jimmy, do me a favor. Heath, are you going to be in the post-show with Ian and all that
stuff? I will be.
This is what I was talking about. When Ronaldo disappears from a game, the entire team suffers. The entire team suffers, and you can't depend on that. So, Jimmy, I'll go to you. Let's talk about Manchester United losing to Atletico Madrid. Where do they go now? Obviously, Arsenal looks a favor to go fourth as well. Yeah.
So, do we want to talk big picture? Do we want to talk about this game?
Anywhere you want, man. Anywhere you want.
Big picture, I think it does help them focus just on trying to get in the top four. So now they can commit all that energy there. I think it is a disappointment, of course, and very disappointing for them to have this home game, to maybe get a little fortunate that they had a draw after the first 90 minutes and not make more of it. They knew what Atletico was going to be about. They were going to concede a lot of possession. They were going to give you the space where they feel comfortable giving you the space. But they happened to run into, also, I should make mention of, Jan Oblak deciding to be prime Jan Oblak. It's not what we've seen from him for most of the season, because in their seven previous Champions League games, they have given up a goal. The only other draw or a clean sheet that they had out of these eight were that first game against Porto, which was, I remember watching that one and wanted all 90 minutes of my life back. But with this particular game, Jan Oblak was fantastic, and he was really controlling the box. And when you know that your keeper's feeling like that, we see it with Bayern Munich as well. When Manuel Neuer's feeling it, they always have a chance in every single game because he can step up and make it happen. It's hard to know. I mean, when you look at the starting lineup, and I actually want to get everybody's thoughts here, you went with McTominay and Fred. McTominay hadn't played lately. Matic looked good against Spurs. Pogba had been looking pretty good as well. You bring Bruno Fernandes back into the team. He got subbed off, by the way, when he was kind of your talisman to get the first goal in leg one. I don't, it's interesting. I don't know what you guys thought about the starting lineup, but some interesting choices to go back to what basically what Ole Gunnar was doing before.
I do like that Jimmy only calls it McFred when things are going well. And then he says he's like an upset parent that like when an upset parent that now he says them by the whole name, you know, including their middle names when he speaks to them. And
this, I think it also works when you're criticizing them, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But I will say that, you know, some credit goes to Atletico Madrid in terms of showing a little bit of a bite we've seen it recently. Like very, very recently, but you know, showing some flashes of what's made them good and things that we've, or at least I have thought that they were lacking in terms of just being more difficult to play against. And again, Jan Oblak's a big part of that, right? Of knowing when you have that confidence behind you of somebody who's going to make those big plays and step up and step out in tough moments. And when he leaves his goal line, that he's going to make the right decisions over and over again. There's a confidence that comes with that you build upon, that I thought was, impressive today. And then with regard to Manchester United, I don't even know where to start with this. You know, I think we get a little sweep a lot of the problems under the rug looking at this lineup right here. And I think it's a great question from Jimmy of is this the right lineup? They went after Dalot on the broadcast for him tucking in on the goal. Nice. Which I wasn't against. I think he had to come in. There was three players in the box.
Where's McGuire, dude?
Anyway. You come in that far, you give up a back post. He's beyond the actual back post and you know, gets good clean contact on it. And I just thought of that while we were looking at the lineup. But overall, it still comes down to this. When I was switching between the games and I was watching Ajax playing against a team that was also very difficult to play against defensively, they were at least taking chances in and around the box. There was a rhythm to the way in which they were trying to break them down. And it was an exercise that you do in training all the time where you almost play numbers up against a defending group that's got to defend the box by any means necessary. And Ajax were creating a lot of chances. I know we're going to get to Ajax. But when I think about Manchester United and the numbers and the quality that they have in and around the box, it's almost like they lack this constant ability to be dangerous, rhythm, one-on-one dribbles, a number of things like that I think are just, I'm kind of mind-blown when I look at, again, the lineup that we just showed, the team that they put out on the field, and then just the lack of that emphasis of, one, getting the most out of Ronaldo, but two, other players just being able to create moments of magic. It's Manchester United, and they're not creating that.
Mm-hmm. NG?
Sorry, I just got a facet. That stat I was just telling you has now been updated. So I can now tell you this is the first Champions League game since 2011 where Cristiano Ronaldo did not take a shot, which I think goes to exactly what Heath was saying about how there was a real lack of creativity. And I don't think you can separate Ronaldo from that. It's just what you were saying, LME. When he's not on form, when he's moving away from the positions you want him to be in already, and this has happened in the space of less than nine months, Manchester United have become a team that don't know what to do. If you put Cristiano Ronaldo in that team, they can only play to him. You know, mm-hmm, it has turned. Bruno Fernandes has gone from kind of one of the most decisive players in big games, I think, that the Premier League has and that Europe has, into a player who was a pretty significant hindrance across two legs.
Would you say, Bench, really quick, that it's because he defers his alpha male status to Cristiano Ronaldo? Because he does the same thing with Portuguese's national team, where he just isn't the same guy, doesn't take over the same way. And I feel like there's some alpha male going on.
Bench, but the other thing I wanted to throw in on that is, as you mentioned that, when you go back to the first few games of the season before Ronaldo had arrived, and you saw Mason Greenwood playing with Bruno Fernandes, there was something budding there in terms of one checking in, one going into the space, being able to stretch a defense, knowing you keep defenses honest. And then you were like, okay, now we've got Jadon Sancho that can step on into the wing. And you started to see the puzzle pieces coming together and some really brief flashes of like, okay, this team has an identity in the way in which they attack. As soon as he got there, then everybody becomes, I've played with a few star players that have that much energy, whether they want to or not. Jimmy Conrad won. Never at the level of Cristiano Ronaldo, but you always hear about Jimmy. These players and just the gravitas around them and the pressure and the nerves and the just how much life they can suck out of everybody, both for the good and the bad. I just, you know, wanted to point out those first few early games before he arrived, there was something there, at least what I was watching.
Yeah, I just want to make something very clear here. And Bench, I'll let you chime in. And thank you so much, everybody, for the comments. We're reading them and we want to comment on it. Obviously, a lot to discuss, especially if you are a Manchester United fan. Listen, the point that I was trying to make on pregame, and I'm making it now again, and I'm telling Jimmy to please make sure be my stand-in when he goes back to post and talks about this, is that it's not about Ronaldo. It's about the decision to bring him in and sort of miss out on certain areas in the pitch that needed way more strengthening. Mm-hmm. We're joking about McFred, but like the midfield is a massive part that needed to be fixed very early on. So my point was, you bring Ronaldo and it's a band-aid on a gunshot wound. It's like, he's going to score you goals. He's going to get you to a certain level. But when he doesn't deliver, then what happens? The entire team sort of falls flat, which is what you guys are talking about when it comes to Bruno Fernandes. And then you see less productivity with Jadon Sancho. You know, you don't know what to do when it comes to Elanga, or even Marcus Rashford has faltered so much. So, you know, it's a massive issue. And it's not about Ronaldo. It's about the decision to put him there.
Tell him, Benj. It is.
Yeah,
tell him,
Benj. Go ahead, James.
But he's just, you know, whether deliberately, I'm certain it's not deliberate, but he is inhibiting players around him. They cannot help. But, and I, you know, I don't know. I've not played the game. I mean, Heath and Jimmy can explain this far better. But you can just feel that this team feels subservient to Ronaldo. And when he goes wandering off, you are absolutely right, LME, that, you know, it's not his fault that they signed him. It's not his fault that they got carried away by emotions. And I still, you know, with my Charlie from It's Always Sunny meme, I still see all these things that lead to Manchester City never wanted to sign Ronaldo, but they thought they could bait Man United into doing it. It's the
It's Always Sunny comparison. That's good. Yeah.
But I mean, United were never going to address the midfield anyway. That's not what they want. You know, they want to make emotional signings. They want statement signings. You know, does anyone doubt that, like, come the summer, they're going to be going all in for Haaland, they're going to be going all in for Harry Kane, and that then in the end they'll go, I suppose we need to buy a defensive midfielder. I suppose we need to look at a right back that actually kind of contributes anything both in attack and defence. Because right now, I thought, you know, we'll go back to what Jimmy was asking right at the top about the 11 that was selected. I didn't have many complaints with it. Maybe you play Pogba instead of Fernandes, and, you know, but aside from that, maybe you drop Maguire. But besides that, what else do you do?
Yeah, it was funny when Maguire stayed in when they were making all these subs. You know, he made some significant subs. I'm like, why not keep Fred on and go to a back three, and then Fred or Matic can slide into your back four if you need to get into that kind of formation that you're comfortable with. It was interesting. Some interesting choices from Rangnick. And obviously, if Elanga scores that one that hits off of Oblak's face early, or if he scores that one right after halftime and gets the game even, we're probably talking about this a little bit differently, because Atleti probably went there for one goal, only had one goal in them, and they got it. And yeah, it's tough. I mean, I look at this team and as somebody said in the comments, is Telles, McTominay, are those the guys that are going to go win you trophies? Like, when you look at that team,
that's my point.
Yeah,
that's
no,
my point.
Well, that's the thing. You signed Ronaldo though. Yeah. And he is a guy that's won trophies and he can bring that, but he's not surrounded by the players that can match that level and that level of intensity.
Jimmy, or even give him the service that he needs. Jimmy, talked about it. Remember when we did an episode, literally as it happened, we did an emergency episode, and we'll put our hands up. We were like, wow, this elevates United. This makes them at least a little bit stronger in terms of, at the very least, from an offensive standpoint. It'll alleviate the pressure when it comes to the other players. Obviously, back then, Mason Greenwood was still in the count. So we were like talking about all the things that he's going to be able to help with. And we put our hands up, at least I did, and said I was wrong, because United, you know, needed so many other things. And by the way, thank you so much for all your comments. Keep them coming. We need more and more likes before we can give you a Paramount Plus gift card, by the way. So keep on liking.
Go ahead. Likes. We just need 100 likes. What I'll say is, I've seen a lot of comments, whether it's on this platform or on you know, Kigalasso Pod, when you're hitting us up on Twitter or whatever it is, that Manchester United need to just restart. Well, in some ways they were. They went out and got Jadon Sancho, right? They went and got a young player, and then they bought Ronaldo, and it kind of, I think to your point, LME, it just kind of made everything stop and get a little static, because they were trying to build around a younger player, and obviously at some point they were going to move on from Cavani and maybe save some money to go get a Haaland or somebody else, or Vlahovic or whoever, And then the Ronaldo thing came, and what were they supposed to do with that? I mean, the guy's still scoring a bunch of goals, but I think it is really detracts from maybe a plan that they had that just got stopped. I don't know. It's interesting times for Man United.
It's not his fault, but Rashford hasn't been the same, right? You brought in a guy directly in kind of competition. Martial wasn't the same. Mason Greenwood wasn't the same because he started playing in a different position. Jadon Sancho was part of working him in and hasn't really found himself yet at the form. And again, none of that's Ronaldo's fault. But like you said, it basically hits a pause on whatever the project was, wherever they were going, whatever these signings meant. It hit the pause button on that. And I think that's problematic. If you watch the way the team plays, anywhere in and around the box, the only person they're looking for is, where's Ronaldo in the box? Where can we whip the ball to him on the back post? Where is he in the middle of the box? Because at times when you have a player this big, a clap from you trying to play that person is worth more than playing the right pass, right? The good pass or the right pass. And I swear to you, if you watch it, everybody's got that tunnel vision because you're playing with Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. He's one of the greatest players ever. And he's your best chance of scoring, that everything becomes like in and around the box, like satisfy Ronaldo, satisfy the team, get the ball closest to the goal. It's a really weird dynamic. And it was to be expected. And then when you think about that with regard to the project, again, stands still until you can move beyond this Ronaldo era. He's one of the greatest players ever. You can't just decide like, oh, we'll get him in on he's going to buy in on this thing where we're going right now. No, everything revolves around him because he's what he's capable of doing in any game at any time. Unfortunately, that means he has to be able to do that at any game and any time, at every game and every time. And that's just not a recipe.
Really quick before Ben chops in, this is the first time Cristiano Ronaldo will not finish a season with a club trophy since the 2009-2010 season.
Wow. He is breaking records today. I think we should probably, as much as God, I could, you know, talk about decline of Manchester United and how they can fit. I would very much enjoy talking about that. But maybe we should hit on Atletico, who were just like 100% pure, unbridled Atletico. It was really interesting on the UK broadcast out here. Paul Scholes was basically saying, if you swap the managers around, Manchester United win this tie comfortably because Diego Simeone knows how to win these. He knows how to win these ties, you know, and it is by making them pretty much unwatchable, like absolute horror shows. And you could sense like. What's amazing, I thought, what was so impressive about this game was how they turned Old Trafford against Manchester United. You know, not, I wasn't there, but everyone was sort of, you could hear first half, real buzzing atmosphere. And we forget United were good until that goal. Like United were playing well. Like, they were assertive. They had the ball just where they wanted it. They had play just where they wanted it. And Atleti scored and they just ruined the game as a spectacle. And the Manchester United fans were losing their cool, turning on the referee, who wasn't great, but you know, Atleti put pressure on the referee, they put pressure on the home fans, and then they put pressure on the players by just being intolerable. And it's brilliant, and it's going to be really tough for whoever else has to play them. And you know, much credit to them. Equally, I thought Rodrigo De Paul like balanced that really well with some creativity. Koke was magnificent. I think they're a much better team with him in, but yeah, I really, really don't want to have to watch their two quarterfinal ties. If I,
I'm kind of hoping for a Madrid derby quarterfinal over two.
Yeah, that would be
that would be pretty special. Yeah. But what I'll say very quickly was that there was a middle block that Man United were trying to get into when they sat back or they decided we're not going to press in this particular instance. They set up in this mid block. And Atleti had scored 5 minutes earlier, but it was offside barely. Llorente just got started a little bit too much, and Joao Felix scored that. Yeah. And I feel like what they did was they played through the low block. They did a little in back and through. Koke, to your point, Benz, was magnificent, and he was the catalyst of getting this ball through midfield and creating that opportunity and all of a sudden breaking that pressure, that mid block, and springing and getting in behind, right? There's only a few times we saw either team really get in behind the other team, and that was one of those instances. And I think that gave Atleti a little bit of belief. Because when you see it 5-6 minutes later, it's the same thing. A little in, back, and through that starts the play. Joao Felix goes in there. And then, obviously, Manchester United cue the circus music to start staring at the ball and stop looking at where everybody is to mark. And Greasy Griezmann puts one into the back post. That's what I like to call him, Greasy Griezmann. And, you know, it just – everything everybody was kind of in the half space. Alex Telles doesn't have that urgency to get out to Griezmann to really put
look
some pressure on him.
Right here, yeah.
Maguire. Yeah, the whole sequence was good, but they did really well of getting through that low block, and they had done it 5 minutes earlier, and I feel like that gave them the confidence to do it again. And again, it's a Diego Simeone special to win 1-0. When you have Jan Oblak playing like he is in goal, and he's really dominating his box, and you could see all of his teammates giving him kisses on the head. I was like, man, that must be pretty cool to be Jan Oblak and all these kisses from Atleti players. But that's how tremendous his performance was. He made some lucky saves. He made the saves that he needed to make. We hadn't really seen that from him, at least consistently this season.
Yeah, Cholo did what he does best, frustrate. And that's exactly, what happened in this game. Let's circle back to Manchester United. There's, one more thing to really, well, there's a lot of things to discuss. But, let's make this a nice conversation. This is a call to action for everybody. And Jesus, thank you so much for your question, because that's literally where I'm going. Okay, I wanna discuss about this United squad. As I mentioned early on, they're out of the Champions League. It looks like they won't get Champions League spot for next season. We'll see. There's still some games to be played, but we'll see. But regardless, Ranić will not be the manager after this season. So a lot of things have to happen in order to rebuild. How do you do that? Where do you focus on? We don't have to go player by player, but I mean, it's clear that we all have a specific focus area in this lineup that needs work. Where do we go? Heath, let me start with you. Manchester United, what do you do? You got the money. You're the sporting director. Where do you go first?
Man, that is a really good question. I mean, you're right up the spine all the way through. You're in trouble right now. Literally from goalkeeper all the way through to the top, there's an opportunity to rebuild. And what I go back to, and I'll pick one line or one focus here in a second, is I don't know what the expectation for Ralph was when he came in then, because it's not like he's had autonomy. You've now got the perfect opportunity to rebuild, but you're not going to. You're going to keep on thinking that you can rebuild while doing the same thing that you've always done. And that's the problem where Manchester United is stuck right now. You could rebuild, you could clean house, you could change all these things, but you don't, as a fan or as a club or as an organization, with the size of the club, at a certain point, you got to make the decision to rebuild the right way, which means you need the right sporting director, the right manager, and then you got to start building your team the right way around a philosophy, a system of play, a style of play. And I don't think they're ever going to do that, because the expectation is Champions League or bust. It's challenging for a title or bust, which it's currently bust consistently at the moment. And it's impossible to rebuild without actually committing to rebuilding. You don't get to go and say, you know what, we'll change McTominay and Fred and maybe Pogba, and we'll bring in a couple other big name midfielders, and that'll fix things. Because if you just look across the board, you just have a bunch of individuals and none of them geared to play any which way that seems cohesive towards moving towards something of significance in terms of winning trophies or winning titles. And so at a certain point, when you go back to when they brought in Ralf Rangnick, I was excited because I was like, oh, there might actually be some autonomy here to make some tough decisions. Bench Ronaldo if you had to, which you were never going to do. Paul Pogba, okay, out. You move some players in January transfer window, great. But you're still stuck with the same core issues. And until you're willing to give up results to be able to do that, which I think Arsenal has gotten rounded the corner of just saying eventually, now we're going to play young. We're going to go young. And if it bites us in the ass, that's okay. But at least we're going to stick to something. Instead, Ronaldo's stuck in this hole. Well, we've got the players and we're close, but we're really far from anything significant. And that's not a rebuild, And so when I think about where you need to start, I think about going right up the spine. But I do think winning midfield battles is just such an important part of winning the Premier League. It's such an important part of doing well in Europe and right up that spine. And again, I'm confused as to where I want to stick, because as soon as I said midfield battles, I'm like, change your center backs, change your goalkeeper, change your strikers. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm going to go with the central midfield now, of just upping the quality of that, because on their day they can be decent, but it's not centered or built around a certain style of play or way in which you want to win games, or leadership and those types of things that I'm saying. Like, if you could start there, I think it's an okay starting point.
I mean, he's mentioned Arsenal, and I mean, you don't want to kind of fall into recency bias, but they have just been in the sort of situation United, and like he says as well, there are a million and one ways you can kind of look at this. I saw one of our comments there praising David De Gea, and yes, he's a fantastic shot stopper this season, but when you see him with the ball at his feet, you feel like he's a player that modern football has passed by. One might say the same thing about some of the stuff Bruno Fernandes does, where he plays like, especially on the ball, he just plays like a 10 with no responsibility. I think they really, and I know we said this about PSG as well, this is an attitude thing. What do you expect to see over the coming 48 hours? You're going to see all sorts of newspaper stories about how X player has let down the dressing room. That's what his teammates feel, or X player feels let down by his teammates, and so on and so forth. Gary Neville complains about this all the time. Like, that's a culture thing. And you need to pretty much, if you see what Arteta did at Arsenal and you see what Klopp did at Liverpool as well, you have to, you know, clean ship. A lot of players have to go, even good players who deliver for you, because you just need a new environment. You know, it was one of the things actually Ole Gunnar Solskjaer kind of was getting right on occasion. It seemed like a good place where players were happy with each other, but that's where I think it's much deeper rooted than just buying more players. They've been buying more players for donkey's years and it hasn't fixed anything.
Can I add in one more note on that? I think the turning point with regard to, and I don't mean to bring Arsenal into this conversation, but I think it is relevant in a sense of, like, I mean, I really want to, I'm just not meaning to purposely. They just happen to be a relevant comparison, is getting rid of Aubameyang for free after being the one who says, I'm going to double down on this guy, give him the biggest numbers or wages we've ever given before, I think was a telling sign of, again, that rounding of a corner of saying there's something actually happening here. We're building something. And if you're not on the bus, you're off the bus. And doing that Man United is going to have to go through this a horrible chain of events that happens when you're rebuilding, that it's going to take some tough decisions. There's going to be some club legends like a De Gea where you go, well, he's actually done really well. He's done a great service. Give him his testimonial if you have to. But like, at a certain point, you've got to move on with just fresh eyes, fresh blood, somebody else, like just a whole new group of people that I think is going to require some of these players that are legends and well-respected and loved and adored by the fans and the club are going to have to move on with that as well, unfortunately.
Well, I think it's going to be easy. Harry Maguire, send him back to Leicester. Ronaldo's not going to play in the Europa League, so he's gone. Cavani's probably out. You can move on from some of all the other players. I think you go get, if you want to spend some money, then just fix the spine of the team. You go get some younger players that have tremendous upside that are actually been proven winners. So go to Lille. You got Jonathan David up top. He can fill a hole. He knows how to score goals. You can get Sven Botman in the back, 6'4", center back, young upside. Go get Jude Bellingham from Dortmund. You can go play with Jadon Sancho again. Go get Ryan Gravenberch from Ajax. There's plenty of players that you can go out there that can spruce this team up and maybe elevate everything. But they have a lot of holes, and that's part of the issue, is that they committed a lot of energy to players that maybe just aren't good enough. And maybe not, definitely not good enough for Manchester United, at least how we like to look back on them romantically. So yeah, there's a lot of questions. Obviously, we could fill a whole podcast just talking about Man United, but we'll stop it here because there's another team that did pretty well today. They're named Benfica.
That's very, very true. But excellent, excellent commentary from you three about this game and what happens to Manchester United in the future. We got a call to action, by the way. Before we go to break, tell us how you would fix Manchester United if you were in charge. Keep it PG. All right. Okay. Just
did
let
you say
it.
Tell us. Did you say tell us?
Yeah. There you go. I like it. We're going to take a break here. Kego Lasso Champions League Tuesday recap. When we come back, as Jimmy mentioned, a good win in Amsterdam. And no, it did not come from the one that you think. Kego Lasso, Jimmy Conrad, Heath Pierce, James Bench. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back, everybody. Champions League Tuesday recap. James Bench, Jimmy Conrad, Heath Pierce. Here's my read for the evening. Que golazo, listeners. We want you to compete with us in a bracket challenge game. I'll be there. Jimmy will be there. Heath will be there. James promises me that it will be there. And we will all be there. And we want you as well. Join us at cbsports.com/golazo brackets. And the winner gets a $100 gift card to Paramount Plus. You're able to watch the NCAA tournament games on Paramount Plus. Tons of soccer from the Champions League to CONCACAF, golf majors in the spring, and NFL football in the fall. Also, we're excited for the debut of Halo, which is streaming March 24th exclusively on Paramount Plus. Head to ParamountPlus.com/Halo to try it for free. But let's get back to those brackets. Who wants to just one? By the way,
I did this morning and it was emotional. It's like
I've done mine too.
You want to be competitive and you're like reading all the notes and stuff and you're like, oh yeah, well they played pretty well and they finished with a 15-1 streak to end the season. They just won their league tournament. Yeah, I got to go with them. And then
it's a lot of work.
It's hard. It is, but it's awesome because you get competitive. And of course you want to flex on everybody once you're a champion. Like I'm
absolutely gonna be. Like I did against my wife's primary school, elementary school. That was
learned a lot about you right now, Alan.
Anyway, make sure you create a group to compete against friends and fill out your brackets for the chance to win a trip to the 2023 Final Four. It's free to enter. You can play on the CBS Sports app or at cbsports.com/golazo brackets. All right, Champions League. James.
I'm not done with bracket talk. I need to check I've done this right. So, Jimmy, I know you said I should back UCLA.
You should.
If I've done this right,
not all the way, James Bench.
Well, I mean, they got to the Final Four last year.
I've got them losing to Duke. Is that acceptable? Everyone,
you know what? That's very romantic of you to go with Coach K in his last season. But
no, I've done my research.
That's pretty good, James. That's not bad.
Well, what is UCLA seeded? Duke is two, right?
UCLA's four.
Okay.
But you know, Duke is with Coach K entering his final March Madness, so there could be a romantic appeal to that. But Jimmy's right. UCLA made it to the Final Four last year, and they're a very good team. Gonzaga is the number one, I feel. I feel like they're a good machine. They're the favorites. But if you want to win March Madness, you got to gamble, James Bench. You got to be a little... Hey, James Bench, you love the NBA, don't you? Penny Hardaway's in this bracket.
Isn't Gonzaga... Haven't they got that really tall, skinny center?
Yeah, the 7-foot-1 unicorn. That's right. Yeah.
He's the Sven Botman of college basketball.
I can't wait for the Knicks to draft him. And then
still lose.
Still lose.
Yeah, exactly. But there you have it, everybody. Matt Norlander, I'm sorry, but this is where you get your college basketball info, by the way. All right, we got some comments here regarding Manchester United. Still Conte or Pochettino as manager? Thank you so much for that comment. I would buy a quick center back, decide on a goalkeeper, sign a right winger, DM, and change coach. That's a long laundry list there. Thank you so much. But let's go back to that first question, by the way. Conte or Pochettino? Or is there anybody else that you would bring in? I mean, Eric Ten Hag is probably available now. Let's go around the table very quick. Heath, who would you bring?
I'm so glad he didn't come.
I don't know. Heath, like,
quick. I'm not asking you to, like, give me an essay.
Yeah, go with...
I gave you a list of three, right? Okay. Conte is done with Tottenham. He wants to go. Pochettino's done with PSG. He wants to go. Eric Ten Hag wants a new challenge. Who do you pick out of those three?
Give me Ten Hag.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Jimmy?
Yeah, Conte wouldn't come. Pochettino, nah, I don't buy him actually saving anything at United. I'll go Ten Hag. I think at least he's got some different ideas and a little bit of that Ajax DNA. And he's a former center back as a player, so obviously I'm a big fan.
James Bench?
I'm torn between two, either Graham Potter or Ralph Hasenhüttl.
Those weren't the options, Benjamin.
I'm having them. I'm having one of them. I'd say Graham Potter. I think, like, you kind of... I don't want to sort of go Man United DNA because it doesn't really mean anything.
Hasn't Brighton lost five games straight for the first time in their history?
But that's like suddenly become a thing that we would criticize them for. Like,
I'm just saying.
That would mean that Manchester United finally gets Moises Caicedo, I think. Maybe that would be if he brings him along with him.
Bring Danny Welbeck with him as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Luis Enrique. How about that?
I like it. Right, after the World Cup, you never know, but that's in November. So anyway, keep them coming, these comments. I love it. Let's talk about the next game. Ajax was pretty much everybody's favorite to definitely go through when this fixture originally came out. And then in the first leg, a 2-0 result, and you thought, well, Ajax are at home. They're in Amsterdam, Jimmy Conrad. It should be fine. And look what happened. Plucky, plucky Benfica and Darwin Nunez get that goal, 3-2 in aggregate. Your thoughts?
I'll start with a stat that I found because I love the stats. Ajax have failed to win their last 9 home games in the knockout stage of the Champions League. 5 losses, 4 draws. And the signs have been there because when we look at Erik ten Hag's tenure of the team, he took charge of them when they had that really special season, 2018-2019. They were up 3-0 after 3 halves against Spurs in the Champions League semifinals. Then Lucas Moura scored 2 goals and then scored the 96th minute to have Spurs go to the final. I'm still bitter about it because Ajax-Liverpool in the final would have been immensely more entertaining than that final that I saw. The only Champions League final I've ever been to was boring AF. I just want to throw that out there. And then the following season for Ajax under Ten Hag, they get knocked out by Getafe in the round of 32 in the Europa League. Round of 16 next year, excuse me, quarterfinals of the Europa League against Roma. They're better than all these teams, and somehow they find a way to lose. I don't understand it. So again, now we fast forward to here. Benfica, they're up 1-0 in complete control. They've won all their games so far. Then they have an own goal. Way to go, Sebastian Haller. Then they score. He makes it. Okay, he makes amends. Gets it to 2-1. They let them get back into the game. They give him some belief to make it 2-2, and they can't get the job done at home. It's crazy. They play well. They're aesthetically pleasing. Everybody loves the way that they play, but that doesn't always translate into results, which is actually in stark contrast to what we see with Diego Simeone and Atleti. Never aesthetically pleasing, but somehow gets the result. And so that's what kind of pisses me off about Ajax. It hasn't translated into any real tangential success in Europe. Yes, it looks great, and they have players that people want in their team, but talk to Donny van de Beek, that hasn't really worked out. And then so, you know, but it's just they're not getting to the finish line, and maybe Ten Hag does have to move to try to go prove himself somewhere else.
Yeah, I agree with everything Jimmy said, but like, just
I love the contrast and energy. That's great.
I know.
Well, what can I? How can I match Jimmy's energies?
No, I'm too much caffeine over here.
It's exactly. It's not 11 o'clock at night. I suppose
that's a good point.
These games, like, they happen sometimes. If you kind of, you would almost have said, other than, you know, the quite important part of putting the ball in the net for 75 minutes, Ajax were playing this game perfectly. They were getting a lot of shots. They weren't amazing shots, but they were getting their efforts. And, you know, with 75 minutes played, Benfica had 3 shots worth a combined 0.07 XG. One of them from Nicolas Otamendi, which I can't remember, was a 0.0 XG shot. I didn't think they existed. I thought that, like, pretty much every spot on the
pitch. Well, they do, James.
But, you know, stuff happens. Like, you get done by the one good chance that your opponent has, and then you're out of the Champions League.
I'm with you, but to Jimmy's point, there is something about, and it's kind of similar to PSG, I think. Like, you know, when you're so used to be dominating in a specific domestic league, you got to realize that the moment you enter the Champions League, it's you can't just be a pretty painting. Sometimes you really got to go out at them and be a little pluckier. Did you see that today from Ajax? Did you see that they were at least going for a plan B if plan A wasn't working?
But plan A's always worked. So the difference between Ajax and PSG is that Ajax have played really good football. They have, like, outperformed what we expected of them. And then they just ran into a brick wall. Like, I don't doubt that when that Darwin Nunez goal goes in, I'm certain that some of the players that have been around longer can't help but think, oh no, this is happening to us again, just like it's happened to us before. But, like,
and there was an amazing save in the last second from Vlachodimos, the Benfica keeper, as well. Like, yeah, fortune did favor Benfica, but fortune favors the brave, as they also.
But they weren't brave.
They were brave.
They defended well.
James, you're not going to give Benfica credit here. They were so plucky. They were so resilient. They were good in Amsterdam too. Like, you got to give them credit.
Yeah, of course. No, they deserve huge credit because that's how they came out to play, to keep it tight, to nick a 1-0, and it's worked. So they deserve credit. All I'm sort of saying is it's super easy to work backwards from the result, but I think that if you kind of play that game through, again, Ajax will win it.
Yeah.
My only argument about where Ajax is right now and where I think Ten Hag needs a new challenge is that this year was a little bit different in the fact that they built a team that was a little bit older. Normally, when Ajax goes out, you go, well, you know, young players, they're going to sell on. They have turnover every year. They're selling their best two or three. You know, it's sort of been the story, but they brought in Haller on the team. They've got, just looking at some of their players that aren't super young, Tadic, Daley Blind, you've got Bergwijn, you've got Klaassen. You know, you've got a number of these players that are not young, and they kind of built this team a little bit more to what seems like withstand a match like this, to be able to go one step further, one step closer to doing something spectacular instead of being this story developmental football academy where they can outpunch most teams and then ultimately go out in the quarterfinals, round of 16, semifinals. Wow, unbelievable, just a step away. This seemed like, okay, we're a step away. Let's add some pieces, right? You bring in Haller, their biggest ever incoming transfer for Ajax. And they put it all into this basket that didn't work out on a date. They completely dominated this game, but it came down to, as Benj mentioned, just a moment and they're out. But it did have a different feel this year where they were almost coming into this challenging for a trophy, or at least mentally thinking that they can do this, as opposed to being like, okay, Cinderella run the year before is a Cinderella run. This year, they were built to be a little bit better and a little more resilient against opponents, to just be a contender instead of an underdog or a Cinderella run story. And unfortunately, it ends up being the same story as years before, when they had significantly younger and more inexperienced players on the field.
Yeah. What I'll jump in and say really quickly is that Ajax also play against Feyenoord this week. They had a big lead, not a relatively big gap in the Eredivisie, their domestic competition, but now it's down to 2 points over PSV. And they play Feyenoord, who's in third, who are only 8 points behind them. And now it's getting a little tight. And now we're talking about this Ajax team who had won 6 out of 6 games in the group stages. So there are only a handful of teams that have ever done that in the history of the competition. And all the three of them happened this particular year with Liverpool and Bayern Munich and Ajax. But there's just something I feel like they're lacking, which is what I said before. It's just like that killer instinct to see teams out, even when they're dominating. Barcelona used to suffer from this when they were in their peak as well. Like, sometimes they would dominate teams, but never, they're looking for that perfect goal instead of that sloppy one. It almost hurts their pride. Like, I don't even want to play if I have to score a sloppy goal. I just want to score pretty goals, you know? And I feel like there's moments where they just need to get a little sloppy, get a little bit dirty, and figure out a way to get the ball and tumble it over the line. They have scored those goals, of course, but I don't feel like that's what they're looking for. It's not in their DNA to play that style. And sometimes you just have to whip the ball in, you know, with 15, 20 minutes left, as ugly as it may be, and try to get on the back of the net, kind of like Benfica did.
Yeah. I mean, in many ways, they are victims of their own domestic success. All right, let's keep going here, because we want to touch on a few more subjects, headlines before we say goodbye here. But Benj, quickly on Chelsea, you were
going to make me talk about this again.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to make
what
you.
What's with Chelsea? Today?
Yeah, what's the latest?
Happened?
Yeah, is there an update?
Did something happen with Chelsea? I haven't even heard.
Yeah, they their bus got stuck in the middle of
you gotta drive somewhere in a bus. Oh man, that's too bad.
Just very quickly, talk to me about the FA Cup thing. It's done, right? Chelsea have rescinded their
yes, yeah. In many ways, it kind of we end the day the same way we started it, which is Chelsea are actually going
nothing
to play.
Nothing to see here, right?
Yeah. Just a weird wobble in the middle, where for 5 hours, Chelsea were insisting that Middlesbrough ought to shut the gates to the Riverside Stadium, for which they have a capacity crowd, which is a very rare occurrence for them since they've been relegated for the Premier League. Sold out, going to be a brilliant atmosphere there, but due to the involvement of their owner in or the close links between their owner and Vladimir Putin, Chelsea are under sanction. Chelsea can't sell tickets. So their reasoning was then that neither should Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough shouldn't have fans at the game.
It's not fair, Benj.
Yeah,
it is.
That's me paraphrasing.
They said it's chalked up to sporting integrity.
Did you see what Middlesbrough said back to that?
They were like, nah. They gave him the stringer bell, like glasses, like, are you serious? Like, no.
One of the most brutal statements in response I've ever seen. You know, this is like something out of the library in RuPaul's Drag Race. They put those, shades on and they read nice Chelsea.
So very quick, James, Lille Chelsea. Does this affect it, or do you still see Chelsea going through?
No, Chelsea will be fine for this game. Well, I think it doesn't help that Lille are without Renato Sanchez. I think that's a bit of a blow. Like, it's going to come home to roost. So I don't think it'll affect the Lille game. But then, you know, they're going to have to take a 10-hour round trip to Middlesbrough at the weekend. That's going to be hovering over things. No one's going to be looking forward to that. Credit, I must say, one of the few good things that came out today from a Chelsea perspective, Kai Havertz, great guy, spoke to him in his presser, and he also said he's happy to pay for his own travel, which is probably a bit of a relief for Chelsea going forward, because they might need a few
with Roman Abramovich's money.
Yeah,
he's well, paying indeed. For his travel with Roman Abramovich. Okay, I'm just making sure I'm connecting the dots here, Ben.
I just want to make sure we don't get, you know.
Yeah, we're not legal on that.
Hey, a question for Jimmy from Dan about the thoughts on Newcastle versus Chelsea. Here we go, Jimmy. How mad were you yesterday?
Kai Havertz shouldn't even have been on the field. Okay, if you want me to have my little, I'm gonna get on my stump here for 30 seconds and say that he crushed Dan Byrne in the face. As someone who suffered that, got my jaw broken by Clint Dempsey with similar elbows, had to retire from the game due to concussions because of elbows and punches to the face. Yeah. I had a big issue with that. And then Kai Havertz, of course, goes on to show up Dan Byrne. And that didn't make me feel very good, because I know what that's like to be that center back and you're trying to one up a striker and it doesn't work out for you.
Dan Byrne had a hole in the side of his head. It was an actual hole that opened up later on in the match. I'm a little bitter.
I'm a little bitter, Dan Kane.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. Well, there's your answer, Dan. There you go. Thank you for that. All right. Listen, very quickly, Spotify comp now. Thoughts on that? That's what they're renaming the stadium.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Apple Music Santiago Bernabeu.
Apple Music Santiago Bernabeu.
I can't believe Jimmy took that moment, because I've been workshopping Mesque and Club Banger.
Sorry, man. I tweeted more than a club playlist, just because it's just going to be amazing when you enter the stadium and you see those words. I mean, if you're a Barcelona fan, I guess this is how you're getting all these players that you're being rumored to have as well. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, the other report before we say goodbye is the UEFA ban, by the way, of Russian teams is upheld by the Court of Arbitration of Sport. Right decision. I take it from everybody here. Heath Pierce, you agree?
Yes.
Jimmy?
Affirmative.
Bench?
Yeah, 110%.
Well, there you have it. Des Norris, the Neil Young stand at the refurbished Bernabeu. Very good, Des Norris. Very good. You're on it. It's been a long day for Des Norris, but he's still on it.
He's on it.
I love it. Well, that's it. That's our Champions League. Yes, I know, Des. Our Champions League recap for Tuesday. By the way, Paramount Plus, come on now. There's a $100 gift card for you. We need those 100 likes. I don't even know if we need it, but we need all these comments. Oh, because we have Paramount Plus gift cards to give away like confetti. So make it happen. Mm-hmm. But thank you so much, everybody, for 10,000 subscribers. We really, really thank you. Jimmy Conrad, thank you, brother.
Thank you. I'm just making it rain over here with my Paramount Plus $100 gift cards.
I love it. Heath Pierce, I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. We should also just have Jimmy sit on here and not allowed to talk until we hit 100. Just...
Oh my God, that's so mean. Why just Jimmy? Just because.
Well, just, you know.
Because I don't know.
He's got a lot of energy.
My positivity brings Heath down. That's why.
What? I'm also a positive man, Jimmy.
Heath used to say that to me in national team camp. He'd be running in the mornings and I'd have good energy, kind of like I am now. And he goes, dude, your positivity's bringing me down.
I just wish that like every like that would come in. It's just Jimmy on the screen, kind of like what's his name when he sat by the fire for that like 24 hours, whatever.
And or like when me and you did it at the beginning of a recap.
All he can do is a thumb up every time a light comes in. It's just give the thumb up, but he can't talk.
I sometimes forget, like when I've come out of a draining weekend preview with Jimmy, like remorseless optimism, that like Heath's had to put up with this for most of his life now.
Oh man, and the USMNT hour as well, and all these things. Well, listen, Jimmy, I'm a positive person too, so I'm with you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it gets better, everyone. It gets better.
Yeah. James Bench, thank you for staying up late with us. I appreciate you too, my friend.
My pleasure. It's always fun to spend my evenings with you guys.
I love it. Thank you, everybody. Qué Golazo Pod on Twitter, youtube.com/ Qué Golazo. Where anywhere you listen to the pods, we got plenty more to come, including, of course, Wednesday's Champions League recap, calling Calcio weekend preview, and so much more. Have a great rest of your evening. We will see you next time. Till then, cue everybody waving. Bye-bye.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.